All right, good morning on this Monday. Welcome into the program. Bill Ryder with you from an exuberant Los Angeles. I'm sure the mood is very different in Toronto, but we are excited, wherever you're listening, to have you here on the program. The phone number is 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. If you want to give us a holler, sports media, that's us. Social media. It all blends together. Ryan underscore Hickey, number 3 for the executive producer, Ryan Hickey. I'm on there, sports writer, sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. The Bills best the Chiefs. Slow down your horses if it means anything at all. We'll explain in about 20 minutes. The Chicago Bears win a shootout against a bad football team. See the previous point, apply it to that one. We'll get into a lot of happenings from college football. Ryan Harris is going to be on the show. We'll do buy or sell as we always do. We'll update you on the two remaining competitors in the right of the new NFL Survivor Pool. One of them has guaranteed that the bum of the week will be your favorite human being. Me, just kidding on the favorite human being part. We're going to start with the World Series, though. I know it was a few days ago, but the excitement, the clutch play, the collapse perhaps, the heartbreak, it all carries over to this Monday. And as a sort of neutral, I'm a Cubs fan, I live in L.A., you probably know that because you listen to the show. As just a baseball fan who had a slight lean to the Dodgers, I know that's rare, I know most people were rooting against him, but as a sort of neutral, that is one of the most thrilling World Series I've ever seen. And my slight lean for the Dodgers held throughout the entirety of Game 6, when L.A. was able to find a way to win that game. They ended it with a crazy double play. They doubled a dude off second base. The Blue Jays were so close to winning it. That was on Halloween night. And then obviously Saturday night, Game 7. I think a Game 7 in the World Series might be the most stress-inducing sports single moment to watch if you're a neutral. And certainly if you're a fan. Every moment of that game was incredible. Dodgers got down early. They were able to chip away down 3-0. It felt like they weren't going to be able to win at all. We saw the Toronto Blue Jays, and this is where my heartache for Toronto didn't kick in till it was over, because I was sort of rooting for L.A., and I was sort of rooting for just the game to be extended. You've got Miguel Rojas, who hadn't hit a home run off of a righty all year, sends one out of the park to tie the game in the ninth inning. The Blue Jays get the bases loaded. Nonetheless, following that, they start off with a double. Rojas comes in with bases loaded. Not comes in. He's the second baseman. Makes this incredible play. Pinch runner for the Blue Jays. Can't score. I mean, just, it was a vicious series of close calls for the Blue Jays. Multiple times they had the chance to win the whole thing. Will Smith, who is the cleanup hitter for the Dodgers, although he's a catcher, great hitter, comes on, hits what turns out to be the game-winning home run. And in the 11th inning, the Blue Jays again had the opportunity to win that game or tie that game, and they're just not able to get it done. And Mookie Betts, of all people, and I know there's an obnoxiousness to this because Mookie Betts is one of the 7 or 8 or 9 guys who have been brought in over the years by the Dodgers as former MVPs or MVP-level players. This is the first season Mookie Betts played shortstop full-time. Remember, was an outfielder for the Red Sox, came to the Dodgers, moved to second base. This year, full-time shortstop, was a finalist as a Gold Glove winner. It's obnoxious, the talent they have, and it sort of symbolizes it. He makes this not remarkable, but there's a double play that Yoshinobu Yamamoto is able to pull off. And with all respect, this side of Madison Bumgarner, probably one of the greatest pitching performances in World Series history. And you blink over Game 6 and 7, and it's Blue Jays about to win, Blue Jays about to win, Blue Jays about to win. Oh, Dodgers win Game 7. Blue Jays about to win. Blue Jays are going to win. Okay, Blue Jays haven't won yet. Blue Jays about to win. And then all of a sudden, in a shocker, the Dodgers were World Series champions. And it was riveting, and it was painful if you're a Blue Jays fan, and it was everything baseball can present. And here's the takeaway for me. And there is time, and we've talked about it here on the show, to discuss the fact that, yes, the Dodgers have 500 million reasons, advantages over every other team that they play against. And that's going to be a storyline. And Jeff Passan wrote this maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I echoed it here on the Infinity Sports Network, that the Dodgers winning gives credence and I'm on this side of the equation, to the idea when the CBA negotiations inevitably break down a year from now to a lockout or a strike or some kind of work stoppage until there's a system put in place that allows a little more forced competitiveness for all teams. And that's not, for me, that's not just bringing the Dodgers down, it's bringing teams like the Pirates up. But that's for later. And we can talk about, and maybe you want to focus on this, it's out there, the obnoxiousness of Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman and Yamamoto, who I need to give you some of these stats here in a second, and all these players they brought in. But I think that's for later, too. For me, the primary takeaway of that World Series, of games 6 and 7, of the Dodgers being down 3-2 and finding a way to come back, but it's not as if they came back by destroying Toronto in Game 6 or destroying Toronto in Game 7. And it's not for me as if the Blue Jays utterly and totally collapsed. Ryan Hickey asked me a great question this morning. Do I think that the Blue Jays collapsed or the Dodgers won it? And I think the Dodgers won it, and this is why. As a Cubs fan who's been through collapses, it's not as if the Blue Jays were up 3-0 in this series. It's not as if they had a 5-0 lead in the eighth inning. These were close games throughout the entirety of the games. And for the Blue Jays, they got that 3-0 lead early on a Bo Bichette home run that it put Toronto up early, but it didn't put them up in a position where they're up 3 or 4 runs at the seventh or eighth inning. The Dodgers were able to chip away and chip away and chip away, and the Blue Jays got one back. But L.A. won 5-4 in Game 7. And they won by a single run on a remarkable double play in Game 6. These were close baseball games. These were games that operate in the margins. The Blue Jays were a single away, a double away, multiple times from being World Series champions. They were an inch away from being World Series champions on one of the closest plays we've ever seen in the history of the sport. And there's replay now. So we don't have to guess whether the umpire got it wrong, where the Blue Jays were about to score. Rojas made that play, sort of stabbed the ball at second base, kind of fell backwards, fired the ball home, bases were loaded, and Will Smith just barely got his foot down on the plate for the force play to continue the action. My point is this. This wasn't a Blue Jays collapse. And it wasn't, despite the money they spend, a Dodgers domination. This was riveting, beautiful, hold your breath, holy swear word, I can't believe this is happening in baseball, again and again and again. And I won't pretend that Blue Jays fans can enjoy it. They can't. I won't pretend they're going to wake up someday and be proud of their team, although you can be proud of them. The heartache that the Toronto organization, team, fan base just went through will haunt them for the rest of their lives. That's part of it. If you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan and you're 11, this will scar you. If you're a Blue Jays fan and you're 42, this will scar you. Ryan asked me, told me this morning, he's right, this is the kind of thing you never get over if you're the Blue Jays. Not because you screwed it up. Not because the Dodgers got lucky. But because we just watched a World Series that, to me, epitomizes the beauty of baseball at its best form. This was a win for baseball. Because this game came down, this championship, 162-game double, triple, quadruple marathon, and a long playoff came down to baseball plays within the margins again and again and again and again. It was an incredible display of how beautiful the game can be. It really was. And let me just take Yoshinobu Yamamoto for a moment. Just, this is a guy, and look, this, he speaks absolutely to the firepower of the value of the dollar, the mighty bank account the Dodgers have. Because they went and they got him this year from Japan. They had to pay a huge posting fee. He's not a drafted player. He's not a player they brought up through a farm system. But they knew what he could be. They invested in him because they scouted properly. They understood how great he was going to be. This guy won in the World Series games 2, 6, and 7. Let that sink in. One player won 3 games in the World Series, including back-to-back games. On Friday, he came in. He had 6 innings pitched over 92 innings. And then he came back on Saturday and went 2 2/3 innings on 34 pitches. And he was the guy that was able to bring about the double play that ended the series and ended the season. It's one of the greatest pitching performances, maybe the greatest, in the history of the sport. And it doesn't even speak to the fact the Blue Jays were millimeters away. It doesn't speak to the fact that Mookie Betts wasn't able to hit a baseball over the course of the postseason, except for a huge hit he came up with in Game 6 that was critical to the Dodgers. Was it Game 6? Doing their thing. It doesn't speak to the fact that Will Smith, who also struggled a little bit, hit that home run in extra innings that eventually became the winner, but not without grinding through it. It was just a beautiful World Series. I understand if you're a Toronto fan, you don't see it that way. And I understand that if you hate the Dodgers, and many people do, you want to rail about how much money they spent. But the reality is, as a sports fan, as people who love the game, and I've been saying this for years, as somebody who wants baseball to get back to where it should be, where it tugs at the emotional heartstrings, even if it's not your team, it happened for me. I think it happened for a lot of people. That was beautiful baseball. And Dave Roberts after the game, and look, I get it, now he's got, what, now he's got three. Dodgers are back-to-back World Series champions. They're the dominant force in baseball. They're probably going to sign Kyle Tucker in the next month or so, and it's going to be incredibly obnoxious. So we can hate him eventually. But you do have to tip your cap to not just coming back from 3-2, but this Dodgers team going all the way back to, what, the wild card series, having a level of perseverance that spoke, I think, to how this team, despite the standards, expectations of the money, never gave up.
I mean, you look at this journey that we had. We started out in Tokyo, ended north of the border in Canada, going to a Game 7, coming out of the wild card series. And, you know, it looked bleak at times, but our guys never wavered, remained steadfast, kept believing in each other. Who would have thought Miggy Rowe would hit a homer to tie it up? And then what Will Smith does, and just the fight, the pitching performance from Yamamoto, one day off, goes three innings for the win. It's just guys, we asked more than guys have ever been asked to do stuff, and then they all delivered. It was just, I'm just so proud of these guys. I really am.
Look, for the Blue Jays, it's the looks on their faces after the game say it all. There's, baseball's a special kind of heartbreak. I'm not saying that Patrick Mahomes wasn't distraught, whatever, last year, or insert whatever other sport or other player you want. Baseball is such a long slog, and I never covered baseball in my writing days as a daily reporter. But I did it a little bit. I did it here and there, and it was brutal. And I remember that Bob Dutton's a famous former baseball writer, president of the Baseball Writers Association of America, whatever that thing's called. I remember just thinking that dude had signed up for self-torture. It's a long season. And so when you win that thing, all that relief and joy is increased by what has been a slog. But when you lose it, when you extend your season by a couple months, when you're on the brink of the most difficult thing to achieve in your sport, and the only way to go back into it again is to start over on another 162-game season, there's a level of brutality that makes it hard for you to appreciate what you did. That Blue Jays team was awesome and commendable. And I know we say this all the time, but if two teams could have won, this is the year, at least in baseball, that it was deserved. Vlad Guerrero Jr. was so good. I don't know if you saw this. There was a moment where Yamamoto tipped his cap to Vlad Guerrero out of respect at the height of all the stress, because it really was one sensational talent at the height of what he's capable of, representing one of the great teams we've seen in baseball in a long time, respecting the fact that there was another exceptional talent in Vlad at the height of what he could do, representing another team as good as we've seen in a long time. And Yamamoto knew, like I'm sure Guerrero knew, only one of those dudes were going to be champions. Both deserved it. It was an absolutely stunning, stunning World Series. And the anxiety, the stress, the pressure, the dude getting picked off second base for the Blue Jays on Friday, the pinch runner not getting, if he misses, not getting a big enough run, lead off of third base. Like, bro, take the space. We're not going to pick you off third. The throw by Rojas coming a short half frame after he hit that home run. What was it, Ryan? Two outs away from the... I can't remember all the details because I was so overwhelmed emotionally, it fried my brain. And I kept... My son was in the front watch, and I was in the back. I have a bigger TV in the back. And I just kept screaming and yelling. My son kept coming in because I think my TV was a little ahead of him. I'm like, bro, you can just wait the 3 or 4 seconds. It was that kind of magic. It was that kind of World Series. And this is why that seven-game, best-of-seven series is called the October Classic. Because sometimes it is a classic. Sometimes it is legendary. And it was. Not because the Dodgers won. Although here in L.A., trust me, I went grocery shopping yesterday. I've never seen so many happy people at a grocery store on a Sunday in my entire life. It was, no, you take the carrots. Oh, she has a Dodgers thing on. No, you go. You take the parking spot. And I know there's heartache, and I get it. I can relate to it in Toronto. Just as a sports fan, it's one of the most riveting things that I've seen. So bravo to the Dodgers, of course. I know it doesn't feel this way, Toronto fans. I really do. But bravo to you for how close you came. It was such an amazing series. And bravo to baseball. Nice job, Robert Manfred. Whatever. There are changes that need to be made. Sure. Do I think the Dodgers should have to spend less money? Not really. I just think other teams should be forced to spend more, but you'll have to bring some teams down to bring teams up. All that is for later. For now, as sports fans, that was worth every moment that any of us invested in this baseball season, and it was one of the more exciting sporting events I've seen in a really, really long time. Dodgers are back-to-back world champions, and they deserved it against a deserving team in what was absolutely one of the best World Series I've seen in my lifetime. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. If you want to talk Dodgers, Blue Jays, if you want to rail on how you think the Dodgers are awful, if you want to talk about how they bought their way to World Series, whatever, cool, we got you. 888-710-4ISN. Otherwise, I want to catch you up on the NFL weekend, including the Bills beat the Chiefs. It's a big win. It's a good win. Chiefs are only 5-4. Great job, Buffalo. It means absolutely nothing, and I'll explain why next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I don't know if I'll be invited to the wedding, but if I am, I expect the vow to be for better or better. I feel like sometimes on the show, we stumble onto magic on accident. For better or better might be one of the all-timers. Rewriting how marriage vows work. Half of marriages end in divorce. So maybe setting expectations early properly, right? If you're a for better or better person, just get it in the vow.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Let me put a little more, I don't mean to, salt in the wounds of Blue Jays fans with this stat. Now, you don't win a World Series by scoring the most runs. It isn't play seven games and whoever got the most runs over seven games wins, right? You have to win four individual games. Still. The Dodgers collectively in the World Series hit 203, and they were outscored 34-26, and they still won the whole thing. And some of you have pushed back a little bit on the idea that it's that performance by Yamamoto, by Yoshinobu Yamamoto, easy for me to say, is the best of all time. I'm not saying it's the best. I'm saying it's in the conversation. That guy you like hit me up on X at SportsWriter. I hear you. Yoshi had himself a series, but I have to say the greatest pitching performance has to be Jack Morris pitching 10 innings of shutout baseball in Game 7 of the 91 series. To me, better than Larson's World Series perfect game, which was a non-clinching Game 5. Yeah, look, those are in the mix. And I think that I still think there's a strong argument maybe for Mad Bum back in 2014. He was also... Like Yoshi, he was also the World Series MVP. Mad Bum went 21 innings pitched, was 2-0, so he didn't win three of the games. He won two with a .43 earned run average. He struck out 21 dudes in 21 World Series innings, only walked two, did not give up a home run, and he didn't get the third win because he pitched five innings at the end in relief to save the game. That's pretty amazing. Now, that said, Yamamoto was 7 2/3 innings, 3-0, 1.02 earned run average, 15 strikeouts in the 17 innings, only walked two dudes, also did not allow a home run, clinched, as you noted, Game 7 in relief. They're similar games. They're similar performances. And the thing about it is I don't need people to be like, hey, look, Mad Bum's better, Yoshi's not that good. That's not the right perspective. The right perspective is, and I bring up Mad Bum all the time, randomly, in sports conversations with you here on the show, just talk about clutch play and people that do it when it matters, because I think Bumgarner, at least in modern baseball, let's say McGuire, Sosa, home run chase to today, which covers basically 20 years, Mad Bum's postseason performance in 14 is the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And by the way, Randy Johnson was pretty good, and Greg Maddux had a run, and there's a lot of guys that I can point to. Josh Beckett was outstanding. Mad Bum's the best I've ever seen. He almost single-handedly won a World Series for his team. Yoshi is in the same threshold. It's probably the same level, but if it's not the same level, you're talking 2 or 3 percentage points behind each other. What was your reaction, Ryan, to the series?
I mean, I do like the fact that you said, like, it was, I think it was, like, one of the just the greatest back and forth series that we've seen. And it's one where, like, even though the Dodgers ended up winning it, how they won it, I think, yeah, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but it feels like one of just truly the best World Series we've seen in at least, like, the last 30 years.
So my wife is a Dodgers fan now because she never really rooted for anything. I used to work for the Dodgers radio network, so we've got an actual Dodgers jersey that says my last name on it, and I refuse to wear it out. She's wearing that to school. My son Henry is wearing a Barcelona thing because he's a Cubs fan. I try to tell him he can be both. He's like, no, screw the Dodgers, but okay. My daughter rooted for the Dodgers. I was kind of into it. I'm in L.A. I like the community, right? We've talked about this. Were you watching this sort of secretly rooting for the Dodgers, rooting for the Blue Jays, or are you totally – what was your emotional state? Totally neutral?
I went into the World Series, I guess, rooting for the Dodgers. I respect them. I don't think they should be punished for basically being really good at what they do. And then the series started, you watch the games, and I definitely found myself rooting for the Blue Jays to the point where it's game six, the doubleheader happens to end the game right there. You had a chance to tie it.
That was amazing.
Chance to win it, maybe. Done. Game seven, back and forth. I was 100% rooting for the Blue Jays and felt so bad. And with a million different opportunities they had to win it and couldn't come through.
One of the things that I think, I was already sort of rooting for the Dodgers, but you do, let me get cheesy here. Sports are great because there is a sense of community, right? There's a connection point. And my son, Henry, wanted to go trick-or-treating on Friday night. I was trying to talk him out of it, which is selfish, so I could just watch the game. But he wanted to go, and Lori and I kind of wanted to sort of, he wanted to go on his own, but we wanted to be in the area. And there's a part of the city I live in L.A., they're called walk streets. They don't have cars. There's house, front yard is a sidewalk house. So it's very safe. And they go crazy. I mean, they do parties, lights. These are rich people. They hand out full candy bars at some places. There's tequila stations. And so we went, and I was going to watch it on my phone, right? And I was going to be the guy watching on my phone, walking around with my kid. Every other house had rolled out these giant televisions so that everyone on the street could see it. And then set up speaker systems. So we watched it with 1,000 fans as their kids trick-or-treated, and it was cool. Like, the vibe, again, I'm not a Dodgers fan, but I'm a fan of Dodgers fans. Like, I had friends, I saw people I know, and it became this sort of raucous outdoor party. While all the kids were getting candy, all the adults were screaming and just biting their lip, and it was, I don't know, you get kind of invested in the whole thing. Let me pay off this Bills tease real quick, okay? Let me give this to you. Buffalo fans, I'm not trying to make you mad. I think it's your year in the sense that you better win this year. I think that there's more, and I said that the Bills window closed a few years ago and our friends in Rochester didn't love it, and I've certainly been proven incorrect on that because in theory, Buffalo still has an opportunity. I would argue it's a different incarnation of that team, but whatever. I'm splitting hairs here. The fact is that the win that Buffalo just put on the Chiefs is a statement win again. And they went after Mahomes a ton, and they put pressure on him, and he had a terrible performance, and his completion percentage was brutal, and it pushes the Chiefs to 5-4. Here's where Buffalo wakes up today. I'll give you the good before I'll give you the it doesn't matter. There is not a clear threat in the AFC to this team. There's not, outside of the Chiefs, who are 5-4. Let me just put that aside. The Bengals don't have Joe Burrow. And the idea that they're going to be able to keep their head above water when maybe he comes back in 6 weeks was thwarted again. Cincinnati has now, after losing to the Bears in a crazy game yesterday, has now lost heartbreakers in back-to-back weeks. Games that, I mean, 2 weeks ago they blew the game, and then yesterday they basically were on the verge of making it the Bears who blew the game, and they couldn't hold on to that lead. Caleb Williams had a, I mean, he was great. He was great at the end. So the Bengals' ability to keep their team in any kind of passable situation for when Burrow returns seems over. Oh, and their defense is awful. It's been brutal. I know the Ravens are starting to make a move, and there's not a lot of a threat in that division, but Baltimore is going to have to fight tooth and nail still just to make the playoffs. And maybe they will, but they're not the team that they were. They're not the threat that they were. They're not going to have the bye this year. You are talking about a Chiefs team that's 5-4. I'm going to put them aside. If you're really looking at who's performing, it's maybe the Colts who, Ryan, you know, didn't have a great weekend. Are you worried about the Patriots? Houston's not very good. Jacksonville's not very good. There aren't a lot of threats. This is Buffalo's year in the sense of it won't be easy. There's going to be formidable football teams, but there aren't the three or four big boys that there usually are. There's the Bills, and then all the other teams are injured or underperforming that usually threaten them. And the teams that have filled that gap a little bit, the Colts, the Patriots, you're not that worried about in the AFC. You're just not. Problem is, Buffalo beating Kansas City in the regular season has always meant nothing. Zero. This is not new. Josh Allen is now 5-1 against Patrick Mahomes in the regular season. Patrick Mahomes is 4-0 against Josh Allen in the playoffs. And there was a time when if you were a Bills fan or a Chiefs hater or just me, I guess, just trying to find a new storyline, you could say, yeah, but it's always those games have always happened in Arrowhead, and whenever the Chiefs slip up enough and have to go on the road, like this year, 5-4, it's going to work out for Buffalo. But we already saw that last year. Didn't work out. Didn't happen. Kansas City marched right into Buffalo and did what they always do. They won that football game. Not because Josh Allen's not good enough. He was great in that game. Josh Allen's amazing. It's just because the Chiefs always find a way to win those games. They are better in those moments. It's why they've got a multitude of Super Bowl wins and then appearances on top of that. And as we've talked about a lot, a floor literally every year since Mahomes began starting for this football team a long time ago of an AFC Championship game or better. So good job, Buffalo. Wait, but really, Buffalo needs to win that game. They always win that game. They always beat the Chiefs in the regular season. The time it's going to actually matter, where it means something, where it's significant, is the playoffs. Now, if you think maybe, because the Chiefs have a tough stretch, you think the Chiefs are going to miss the playoffs, so you can make an argument, Buffalo helped them along. I don't think that's the case. I think the Chiefs are going to be fine. The Chiefs are always fine. They always come on late. They always figure it out. They're going to be in the playoffs. And whether that game, and it will be probably, is in Buffalo or somewhere else, the Chiefs are going to be favored. So I'm not taking anything away from the Buffalo Bills. It's a good win. Nice job. Way to go. Cool. Exciting. You did it. Yay. It doesn't matter until you get to the playoffs and either you beat Kansas City or someone does you the favor of doing it for you. But since the Chiefs have never failed to make an AFC Championship game, you certainly can't count on somebody else taking out Kansas City for you. Good win, nice win. I'm not saying you shouldn't celebrate it, but it means nothing because I've seen this story before. What will mean something is if Buffalo beats the Chiefs in the playoffs this time around. And maybe they will. Maybe they can't. Kansas City is lackadaisical, playing with their food, all the things we've talked about. Not great, but they're still the Chiefs, and they're still the favorites for me in the AFC until somebody beats them. All right, 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. How you feel about the Colts, Ryan? See, I was a good guy. I'm a good person. Not texting you over the weekend, leaving you alone.
Not great. Definitely did not expect an ass whooping and 6 turnovers and Daniel Jones turning back into a pumpkin.
Are they just, yeah, that's what it comes down to, right? You get into a game where you don't control the game and you need him to be the guy. He can't be the guy. That's the problem with the Colts.
Now, I will say the fact that it took up until week 9 for him to kind of look like this is surprising. I thought we'd see it a lot earlier.
Yeah.
Also, to be fair, their schedule has been very weak. That was a bad
Pittsburgh
defense.
Oh, you're running
defense.
Away from the Colts?
No,
the Colts
I'm not,
best
I'm not running
football?
Away. I'm just going to say this. They played 9 games so far. They've looked pretty good for 8 of the 9 games. This is really their first stinker all year. They have the Falcons next week on a bye. They play the Chiefs in a few weeks. I'll make my assessments in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I'm going to try to not overreact to what was a really bad, but one really bad performance.
All right. I'm going to ask you later in the show, what is the real takeaway from 5 shocking outcomes in the NFL. So there are 5 outcomes that I found shocking or sort of eyebrow-raising. And we'll get into which of those are actually real. Sam Darnold the MVP? Are the Bears a playoff team? Is J.J. McCarthy, he did not look great, still the guy? Because I can't believe the Vikings beat the Lions. Do the Colts suck? Oh, there's several things that we'll just try to get into later in the show. But we're going to get into some college football talk after we get a sports flash from Andrew Bogut.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, your Sports Flash is sponsored by Advantage Gold. Before kickoff, get help securing your financial future with Advantage Gold. Text Gold to 85545NOW and request your free gold investment kit or go to AdvantageGold.com for terms. Message and data rates may apply. For the 3rd time in a week, the Eagles are trading for defensive help, reportedly sending a 3rd-round pick to the Dolphins for pass rusher Jalen Phillips. He follows the additions of corners Jair Alexander and Michael Carter II. The NFL's trade deadline is tomorrow afternoon. The Commanders might need QB help after Jaden Daniels suffered an apparent left elbow dislocation in the fourth quarter of last night's 38-14 home loss to the Seahawks. Sam Darnold had his counterpart on his mind postgame.
I will say, too, like just thinking about Jaden as well right now, that last play that he had didn't look too good. So, just thinking about him and what he's going through right now.
Daniels was hurt while being tackled, but the game already decided. He's getting an MRI today, then we'll know how long he's out. And the Spurs lost their first game last night, 130-118 in Phoenix, just 9 points and 9 boards, 6 turnovers for Wemby. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I know what it's like to feel that, and I didn't want to do that to you because I'm a good person. Bye, I'm the best.
Sell.
Remember, this is an honest buy or sell. You said that early on.
It was the right answer. It was definitely the correct answer.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Not the best. That's me. I'm here. I'm hanging out. How was your weekend, Ryan? What'd you guys do? How was your Halloween party?
It was low-key. It was nice. Just kind of hung around, watched most of the World Series. Didn't get too crazy.
You dressed up as a loser. Not my joke, your actual thing. You went with Penn State and Met stuff.
That's correct.
Did people think it was a bad costume? Kind of a cop-out?
Well, I will say a lot of people thought, one of my friends said, oh, I thought you were just dressed up as a sports fan, like just being yourself. They did enjoy it and got a good chuckle once they figured out what it was. But it was definitely not easy off the bat to see what I was doing there.
I figured this out later, but I didn't think of it. What we should have gotten you a sign that said, I'm a loser. Then there was, you wear a loser sign on your
front. But isn't, subtlety part of, oh, okay, that's actually, once you get it, that's funnier than just, putting out in the open, loser.
Loser. Yeah. I mean, that's one way to look at it. The other way is nobody knew what your outfit was.
Very
true.
Really
do a, I mean, in fairness, I had a Rick from Rick and Morty mask that I basically wore on top of my head, and I went out in normal clothes. And then when people said, what are you? I would just pull my mask down.
Okay. And then did they get it afterwards or no?
I mean, then they just, most of these people were drunk dads who were just didn't know. Who are you, man? I'm Rick from Rick and Morty. Nice to meet you. Have more tequila shots where you walk your 7-year-old through the streets. Great parenting. Good job. All right. That got dark. I got a little dark. Let's do, you want to do 5 things you need to know about college football? Let's do it.
Your security clearance is on a need-to-know basis. And these are 5 things you need to know. Number one.
A really quick amendment, by the way.
Yeah.
At the end, there's going to be a little bonus. So we're actually going to do
bonus.
6 things.
You love just doing these segments. How do I say this wrong?
Well.
I'm excited.
It's important. It's not big enough to take up one whole one, but I figured, I want to just, it's small, it's quick, I promise, just to keep the people.
5 things or more. I know, I like it. Let's do it. I love bonuses.
Well,
let's go.
I'm talking to the guy who does ties for power rankings.
Whoa. Shots fired. It's true.
Oh, man. Arch Manning, Bill.
Yeah.
Had arguably the best game of his college career. He threw for 320 yards and 3 touchdowns as Texas took down Vanderbilt 34-31. Manning became the first Longhorns quarterback in program history to throw for at least 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, and complete 75% of his passes against a top 10 team. Now, trailing 34-10 entering the fourth quarter, Vandy did score 3 touchdowns in the final frame to get it within 3, but Texas recovered the onside kick with 33 seconds left to end the rally, win the game.
I mean, look, Arch doesn't play defense. So, all right, here's my, do you want to hear what my takeaway watch? Do you want to hear my crazy overreaction watching the game?
Yes.
Dude's going to be the number one pick in the 2027 draft. That was my, he's got it, because I want it to be true. I want it to be real. And we obviously put everyone, not just you and me, America, the entire landscape, gambling experts, insiders, fans, neutrals like us, put this ridiculous level of expectation on Arch Manning's shoulders, and he couldn't live up to it this year. But that Vandy game's a big game. It's a pressure game. That's a really good football team. I know when we say Vandy, we don't really think that, but they're obviously the 10th best team in the country. And for him to perform at that level, to play the way that he did, I haven't watched every game he's played, Ryan, but I would say I've watched parts of every game. But one that he's played, he looked the part for the first time. He looked the part. So my hot take is next year he'll live up to expectations, which probably isn't true, but that's kind of where my mind went.
You said before, right, is this real or not? Well, we'll know. They have a bye this week, then two of their final three games on the road at Georgia, home against A&M. Two teams left on the schedule. That's not going to go well.
No. This is going to be next year. This a little sign of things to come.
Hey, maybe end of the month we're talking about him as the number one pick in the 2026 draft again. Let's get
nuts. If he plays well against Georgia and they lose, I think that's what... Because a lot of quarterbacks, and we've talked about this, need more than a year. What's the stat that you passed on to me that we've used? Quarterbacks who start a single year in college almost inevitably fail. And the only exception in the last 25 years is that are first-round draft picks is Kyler Murray, and I don't think he's a success. So, I don't need Arch to be great this year to believe he can be great eventually, but you need to see moments of it, and that was a moment.
Number two.
Two top 10 teams fell to unranked opponents on the road as number 8 Georgia Tech was taken down by NC State 48-36 as Wolfpack quarterback CJ Bailey counted for nearly 400 yards of offense and 3 touchdowns, while SMU beat number 10 Miami 26-20 in overtime. Hurricanes quarterback Carson Beck threw an interception in OT that helped SMU beat their first top 10 opponent at home since 1974. Under Mario Cristobal, by the way, Miami's now 4-11 in the month of November or later, and now with that loss, has less than a 10% chance to make the college football playoff.
Yeah, and Florida, again, one of these programs. I don't want to cannibalize whatever you have coming up, but one of those programs that's a great job. Auburn, really, really good job. LSU, really good job. Penn State, really good job. I don't think I'd make the argument that Florida's the better job, but maybe I should. I mean, that is a huge job, and you should be succeeding. Are you going to get into UNC's greatness, or no? You're not going to? Bill Belichick turns it all around? All right, I'll let you do your thing.
Maybe we'll get into that in a little bit.
Because any game UNC wins feels like an upset.
Yes, you're right about that. We'll get into that in 1 second, I promise.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, it's okay. But before that...
Number three.
You mentioned Auburn as a really good job. Why did you mention that? That's because yesterday, for the fourth consecutive Sunday, a prominent college football coach was fired as Auburn relieved Hugh Freeze of his duties after losing to Kentucky 10-3 at home on Saturday. Freeze finishes his Auburn tenure with a 15-19 record, going 6-16 in the SEC. Auburn now joins LSU, Florida, and Arkansas as the open SEC jobs, and they join Penn State, UCLA, Virginia Tech, Stanford, and Oklahoma State as the open Power 4 jobs. Still 1 month left to go before we end the season. Maybe more jobs coming open as well.
What are the 5 best jobs open right now? Where does Auburn fit? Top 5?
Auburn is 100% top 5. I would say...
LSU won.
I think you can make arguments for each of Florida, Penn State, and Auburn. Excuse me, not Arkansas. Auburn.
I think
as number 2.
I think Florida's probably a great job. If Sark goes to the NFL, which again is a Diana Rossini report, there might be some interest. It hasn't happened. It may not happen. That would immediately be the best job. I also think UCLA should be a good job. It's not a good job. It's a Big Ten job now. On the West Coast, in what is almost certainly the most beautiful campus in the Big Ten now. I mean, it's a crazy beautiful campus.
Number 4.
Death, taxes, and Nebraska losing to ranked opponents. Bill, the Cornhuskers lost their 29th straight game against a ranked opponent as the Trojans of USC rushed for 202 yards in their 21-17 victory. Some sad news, Nebraska quarterback Dylan Rolla left the game in the third quarter after we thought was an ankle injury. Ended up yesterday coming out that he fractured his fibula and is now out for the rest of the season. Nebraska in this game, they were up 14-6 at half, blew the lead. They are now 6-3 on the season.
This was, did you watch this game?
I did too.
I thought they were going to win.
Me too.
I thought they were going to win.
Crowd out yep. early. Lincoln Riley on the road.
Yep. Lincoln Riley always loses on the road, complains about the time zone. I have no overarching takeaway other than Nebraska is in such dire straits, and it felt like even if they lost this game, there was a way to, you know, there's still like the season's heading in the right direction. And then Mahomes 2.0, or wants to be 2.0, goes down. Sorry, I should make fun of him. He's hurt. The whole thing is awful. I'm sorry, Nebraska fans.
Number 5.
Other notable scores, Bill, include, as you said, UNC getting their first ACC win on Friday night. They take down Syracuse 27-10. They're now 3-5. Still on a path, maybe to bowl eligibility, we'll see. But things are turning around under Bill Belichick. And other scores, number 1 Penn State. I'm sorry. Oh, jeez. Number 1 Ohio State.
Oh, that was sad. That was sad.
Number 1 Ohio State beat Penn State 38-14. Georgia scored a late touchdown to beat rival Florida 24-20. Utah spanked Cincinnati 45-14. West Virginia upset formerly number 22 Houston 45-35. And Texas Tech dismantled Kansas State 43-20. Also of note in the SEC, Oklahoma upset Tennessee in what was the elimination game for both, as the Sooners now are 7-2. Tennessee falls to 6-3.
I don't even know what to make of Oklahoma.
It was an ugly offensive game. They really had no business winning.
I didn't watch it.
You didn't miss much. They were outgained in every metric.
I have trouble watching that football team. I'm sorry for Penn State. My main takeaway is, in my wildest dreams, making fun of you as a joke at the start of the year, I never imagined it would be this bad.
It's bad.
You know what? I'm going to rename them Penn Fake. Bonus! You don't have a bonus? You have a bonus?
Number 6.
What? No, boo! Bum of the week material. Bum of the week material.
Come on! All right, fine.
Five things
Tuesday,
you need to know.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Bonus edition.
Bum of the week.
Here's the bonus edition. The first batch of the College Football Playoff Committee's rankings, Bill, will be released on Tuesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern. Remember, these are the rankings that will determine the 12 teams that make the College Football Playoff.
I mean, I'm fired up. Let's go. Are you excited? Are you going to be a little watch party?
A little watch party. Let's do it. Let's see what crazy idea the committee has. Maybe they put Texas number 1. Let's just get
nice. Where do you think Penn State's going to be in there?
Good strength of schedule.
79?
Probably they're going to wait to see how the Indiana game goes first. So I'd say like maybe like 26, like kind of the first one out. And then when they upset Indiana, probably put them like 10.
What's the biggest surprise you're keeping an eye on? Do you expect any silliness?
I do. Because these committees, I mean, the final rankings are always usually pretty good. But the journey there is never, it makes no sense.
Doesn't it feel like Indiana's going to be like, well, Indiana's too good. I mean, I'm trying to like figure out who could be.
There's 100% going to be a ranking where like a team is going to beat the other team head to head, but the other team's going to be ranked higher. You know, they have similar records. Like there's always something that makes no sense. And it's going to be like Texas is going to be ahead of Alabama. Make it make sense. You can't, but it will.
By the way, Texas could be in the college. What if Arch Manning wins the whole thing? Not impossible.
Very possible.
Just like it's very possible Ryan Harris is going to blow your mind with football talk next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning on this Monday. Welcome to the show. Bill Ryder with you. Let's talk some football with Ryan Harris, Super Bowl champion, longtime NFL player, Notre Dame football radio color analyst, author of The Mindset for Mastery on X, Ryan Harris, _68. Mr. Harris, good morning. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Bill. Great to be with you as always.
Appreciate you, pal. All right, so for Buffalo Bills fans, and we're on the air in Buffalo country, they get a little mad at me sometimes. I feel like maybe I don't give them enough love and praise. Are you willing to make any conclusions, sweeping or otherwise, about the fact that they did, in fact, beat the Chiefs again in the regular season?
Well, it's kind of like when you go to the arcade and you lost at the 7th level and you need to get to the 8th, but you still got to win levels 1 through 6. I mean, this is a part of it for them. They have to beat the Chiefs twice in the same season if they want to win a Super Bowl. That's the fact. They did the first part now, and again, they did that last year, but they have to win the game in January. But they are rolling right now. Things are going good, and it's a heck of a time to be a Bills fan.
If you're going to set aside the Kansas City Chiefs as part of this next question, Ryan Harris, other than KC, who are the threats, or who is the threat, if you're the Bills, who are you eyeing as the biggest potential obstacle going forward when we get to the playoffs in the AFC?
The Ravens say hello. And I can't believe I'm going to say it, Bill. the Patriots.
Right?
What are we talking? I mean, the Patriots are doing what your Bears should be. You know, come on, man. It's unbelievable. So you got to be careful of the Ravens. And if you're the Ravens at the same time, this is the year it has to happen. But make no mistake, the Chiefs are rolling. The Chiefs have an opportunity here to get everything they still want, as bad as they were, as bad as everybody said they were. They still got a good shot at the playoffs, and things are looking pretty good.
You know, it's interesting, Ryan, because after a quarterback, sort of finding a quarterback, it feels like finding a head coach is one of the really important things for any organization. Mike Vrabel had made an AFC Championship game with the Titans. They blew that lead against the Chiefs. He never really had a quarterback in Tennessee. He was well-respected from the agents I talked to, but the guy couldn't get a job. He just he couldn't. And New England wasn't a great gig at the time. What was it about Vrabel that prevented him from doing the job that clearly he's very, very good at again?
If you now, personally, I believe that Bill Belichick's a little jealous of how successful that he's been Mike Vrabel as a coach, and may have been trying to shut some doors down. Because remember now, Mike Vrabel's not a Belichick coach, which is, how come that is, by the way, Bill? How come one of Bill Belichick's best linebackers was never a coach for him? But now, anyways, but what we're talking about is the fact that Mike Vrabel's turned around that culture by doing things that are intelligent because he's a player. He shortens down that schedule. Yes, he has those guys work hard. But if you hear any of the clips about them and what he said to the team afterwards, he said, hey, we're going to celebrate this one, but this is not our goal. And so there's no kind of, hey, we made it. I can have a great press conference. I can get Bill Ryder out of my back, and he's going to say something nice about me tomorrow. No, he doesn't care about all that. Mike Vrabel's doing what's best for the players, calling smash-mouth football, and players love it.
By the way, I'm going to answer the question you asked me because I can actually answer this one. I was a newspaper writer in Kansas City in 2009, when Vrabel was traded to the Chiefs back in another universe, and he was not a happy camper to have been traded from New England to Kansas City. I think there was some, even then, there was some bitterness in place, right? So it's amazing how it's come full circle, Ryan Harris.
Yeah, and but also great job, Mike Vrabel, right? To have two organizations that are playoff bound now in a matter of 4 years, and that's something that Mike Daboll should pay attention to, you know?
Yeah, no, dude, it's. I mean,
or
being
Brian
a great coach.
Yeah.
No, being a great coach is not easy to do. And I know his agent really well. That guy's in my ear all the time. But whatever. I mean, he's in my ear whispering things that are true. Like the guy does nothing but succeed, and he has not had a world class quarterback as part of his time as a head coach in the NFL. Ryan Harris here on the show. Again, can't make sweeping generalizations about individual games. I understand that. Any takeaway? I want to so badly here. My Bears almost blew a game to the bed, but they won it, right? So you want a glass half full this for me or a glass half empty this? What's the right way to look at this glass of the Chicago Bears?
They needed to win that game. They won that game. My question to you is, do you feel good about the Bears and the way they won that game?
I don't feel good about the Bears ever, though.
Well, I mean, and you know, I think I was happy for Caleb Williams that he kind of made a throw that sealed the deal, again, and a throw across the middle. But, hey, he still made it. He made a quick decision. So I actually think that final drive for the Bears might be the drive that turns Caleb Williams' career around. I mean, you have to fire the football a second faster than you want to. And on that final drive, I thought Caleb Williams did that. Now, can he continue to do that? Well, I don't know how good USC guys are at long-term success, but I know he'll try, Bill.
Talking to Ryan Harris here. It's okay, dude. I think they're going to fail miserably. I'm a Bears fan. I'm used to the pain. I have no hope. You don't have
you
to give me
so
any.
You broke so quick, Bill. You broke so quick. You got to hold out a little longer.
I do like Ben Johnson, though. I mean, it's early, but I have like, and this thing, it's the hope. Are you a Ted Lasso fan? It's the hope that kills you.
Of course.
Yeah,
of
it's
course.
The hope. Should I invest my very limited emotional energy in Ben Johnson? Is that a good investment for my heart and soul?
Of course not. What's he proven to you? I mean, his best thing is that the best thing he did was losing the playoffs. What is going on, man? You know, you got to go more like a Leslie Frazier, Seahawks, or you know, something like that. How about Mike Tomlin and the Steelers? Everybody writing them off for dead, and they just keep winning too. So I would use your scarce emotional energy for other things, maybe even baseball basketball or another sport.
it's amazing when the Cubs provide me with more hope than the Bears. Ryan Harris here on the show, just ripping my soul from my chest. let's talk about Steelers Colts because you know, all of a sudden Daniel Jones reverted back to form. I consider me a Steelers skeptic or agnostic. Are you willing? Is that win enough to put the Steelers in a AFC championship level football team category for you?
Well, the Steelers did win, and yes, anytime you have a coach and the coach and a quarterback that has won a Super Bowl, you are going to have a chance to win a championship. And the big thing was the defense for the Steelers. I mean, what a big win for them. And at the same time, you know, you have to be able to, if you're the Colts, weather the storm. And I love how people are like, oh, it's over. The Colts, it's over. They lost their second game of the year. Some of y'all don't even have two wins out there. So it's like, you know, come on, man. Like, there are going to be ups and downs. And what a lot of fans don't know is it's hard when you start winning and you go on a win streak. All of a sudden, more family wants to come to town. There's more events to go do that you want to do, and your coach is being nicer, and everybody's happy, and then, oh, gosh, you lose a game, and the floor comes out from under you. You have to weather this storm. The Colts are going to be fine, and honestly, it's about Jonathan Taylor, too, in addition to Danny Dimes. But Pittsburgh needed to win to stay in this playoff race in the AFC, and they did.
Ryan Harris here on the show. The Jags are 5-3. The Panthers are a team that are above 500 after a really good win against the Packers. The Vikings are 4-4, but that's a nice win against the Lions. Do you want to sell any level of belief in just something special happening for any of these teams this year?
Well, I really love the Jaguars and what's happening there. They've been winning without anybody paying attention to them. I love their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, and it's a big win against their motivated Raiders team, and they did it on the road. So they're putting some wins together that are gutsy, that their coaches are coaching the players through, and the players are executing through. It's a great time for football, but I'll tell you, you're still going to have to beat the big dogs. And I love how in this part of the season, everybody gets excited. Like Jaguars, we might get to the playoffs. Oh, if the Chiefs are having a bad year. Oh, the Ravens might not be there. No, they're going to be there. I mean, one of the best things that Gary Kubiak told us the year we won the Super Bowl was, hey, the road is real. You're going to have to beat the Chiefs twice. You're going to have to beat the Patriots twice. And we're going to have to beat somebody else who comes looking for a whooping. So you got to get in that mindset, and I really like what's going on there in Jacksonville.
Ryan Harris, among your many career achievements, I'm sure that winning a Super Bowl with the Broncos is at the top or near the top of that list. That is a Broncos team that just continues to win football games. They're 7-2. They beat in a little bit of a comeback the Texans. What do you make of Denver? What is their actual level this year as we go forward to the rest of the season?
They can win a Super Bowl because of their defense. Now they can't. They if they miss the Super Bowl, it'll be because of the offense, right? So I mean, that's what is really going on. And what's crazy, Bill, is they're top 10 in rushing attempts, but it just doesn't feel like it when you watch the game. And you have J.K. Dobbins having a comeback year, and there's receivers all over. Troy Franklin, Cortland Sutton, but this Broncos defense had two goal line stands in the first half against the Texans, and the first one was first and goal from the two. And so this defense has elevated its play. They heard all the noise about Houston having the best defense, which they're still good, but this Broncos team, they're 7-2, and their upcoming schedule is heavily favorable with going against the Raiders as well as then hitting the Chiefs and then an unknown Commanders team right now. Those are the next three games, so they got to do it in the division, but these Broncos can win a Super Bowl this year. And guess where that Super Bowl is, Bill? Santa Clara.
Ryan Harris here on the show. Ryan, Sam Darnold is a top what quarterback this season in the National Football League?
Top five. And he's the top one. He's the number one quarterback teaching you and everybody around what to do at work. They don't want to write you off. They want to talk bad about you. You want to give a bad interview where you say you're seeing things. That's fine. But then you keep at the work, you pay attention to the details, and you have fun with your teammates, you're going to be successful. Everybody in the NFL is cheering for Sam Darnold because one way or another, players have been through that same up and down, and Danny Dimes is cheering for him, and I love the coaching staff that is there, especially offensively. And they're running the ball the way – they're doing things the way it should, under center, letting your defense play, letting your running backs run the game. So Sam Darnold, top five quarterback in the NFL.
Kind of quietly, NFC West have a 6-2 Seahawks team, a 6-2 Rams team, a 6-3 Niners team. How do you rank and assess that division and those teams going forward?
The team that scares me in there is the Rams because they've been there with key players, and you got Davante Adams who wants a ring, right? I mean, I've been in the room when you got a great who all they want to do is win that ring. They shut down the last 3 months of the season. They start walking around the facility with their pajamas on, flip-flops. They're getting massages. They're stretching out. They're coming to practice early and things like that. So the Rams know how to do it in January. The 49ers have been through that January slog but haven't been successful, and the Seahawks haven't been there since Russell Wilson was a quarterback. So the team that scares me in those three are the Rams.
Ryan Harris, I appreciate you as always, and I appreciate your candor on the Bears, and always bring it because
I'm thinking about you all the time when I see them. It's hilarious.
So even when they win, I kind of hate them, you know? I'm such a self-loathing Bears fan.
You're talking to a former Vikings fan. I know the feeling too well.
You get it. All right, brother. Thanks for making time, dude.
Thank you, Bill. Peace.
All right, be good. Ryan Harris on the show, Super Bowl champion, author, Notre Dame alum, color analyst for their radio network, Ryan Harris_68. Did you notice that, like, he takes the Bears so unseriously that he giggles when he hears my pain?
That's got to be so much worse than, like, just having him, like, have vile hatred towards, like, look at that. You're so cute over there. Like, pat you on the head. It's tough.
But I can't be mad at him because I don't take the Bears seriously either. The Bears could be 9-1, and deep in my heart, I would know there's some sort of heartache coming.
I would say that makes you a wise fan, and I wish I had a little more of that in my fandom, personally.
It's just because you get you as a Chicago. I mean, the last few Bears runs, right? NFC Championship game, they lose to a wild card last in Packers team at home, and last Super Bowl, they lose to Peyton Manning playing like he was Rex Grossman in that game and in that postseason. It was brutal.
And going back to the Packers game, not only were they the last team in, that was the game where Jay Cutler got, like, mysteriously hurt and no
pretend
one knew
hurt.
About it.
Yes. Fake hurt.
Knee injury, quote-unquote.
Uh-huh, sure. Smoking Jay.
Weird. It's not ideal.
Not. You know what? Maybe next year I'll go to Halloween as Jay Cutler. I forgot to do that. Because then I can just look disheveled and have a fake cigarette and just look like a, you know. If, you know, you went as a loser, you should have had a Jay Cutler jersey on.
That would have been a very good idea.
Next year for the show, what we're going to do is we're going to do your loser outfit. We're going to do it up. We're going to have 17 or 18 examples. We're going to put together like a Jay Cutler sticker. Who else would be on the loser thing? Who else would be on a loser?
Ooh, definitely Jets logo. That's just a
Jets logo.
Franchise.
Jets logo. Mets, of course.
Right.
Colts. James Franklin, something or other. What about NBA?
Who's a loser?
Is Embiid fair? Never made a conference finals?
Embiid's a good one because he also has a bad attitude as well.
He doesn't have a bad attitude.
That's all. Right? It's not just the play. It's also like the attitude. Like Kirk Cousins is a loser, but I would say his attitude gives him a little forgiveness.
He's still a loser though.
I agree. But like some of the things he says at least are not loser-ish.
Yeah, in baseball, it's more of a. By the way, this is a bit of a side story. Clayton Kershaw was a loser of a kind in the playoffs, and it's gone. It's erased. The guy has 3 rings now. It's gone. It doesn't matter if you're a hanger-on.
That's what it is, though. Like,
yeah,
he has 3 rings. You could argue none of them are because of him, but he does have 3 rings. Yes,
100%.
Especially this last run, he was. Outside of running in from the bullpen in Game 7.
But he's on the team.
He is. He pitched in, what was it, Game 3, I think it was?
My guy Gary Payton's got a ring with the Heat. Did he really, you know.
They will say, I'm sure, ring's a ring. Look at
Carl Malone tried to get in with the Lakers. It didn't work. Had he got one, we'd have a totally different sort of, you know, thing going on.
Would we, though?
Yes. We shouldn't, but we would.
Interesting. Okay.
Because most people don't study history. They're just told what it is, right? Carl Malone got a ring. Gary Payton got a ring. Clayton Kershaw got 3. As time goes on, they sort of lose the details of how and why and what went down.
I agree with you, I guess. I don't agree with it, but maybe that's how it will be looked at.
Here's what I do agree with. Buy or sell being amazing next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
The studies have been done, and people trust and value the intellectual perspectives of attractive people more than unattractive people, even though that has no bearing. That's why people believe me so often. See what I did there?
Sell. On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Before we get into this segment, let me just address something. I just got a little instant message from a Dodgers fan who's all pissed off. Here's his response. Just insanely wrong and ignorant of you about Kershaw not doing anything in any of the championships. I was listening to the show because I thought you knew baseball. Just shows people don't watch the 162-game season. Look, man, you just won a World Series. You should have a little bit easier time with listening comprehension and controlling your emotions than, say, a Blue Jays fan who also would have heard it the wrong way. I didn't say he did nothing. I said that he, Clayton Kershaw, Ryan, Dodgers fans are very sensitive about this. Clayton Kershaw sucked in the playoffs for most of his career. Clayton Kershaw choked all the time. Don't go to 2020 at me, okay? Don't give me this too. Oh, yeah, he's already like clockwork. He wasn't. People are so tribal. You said the truth about Kershaw, therefore you hate him, therefore I hate you. I like Kershaw. He's a really nice guy. I've met him. He was bad over the course of much of his postseason career relative to the expectations. Clayton Kershaw, in the regular season, along with Greg Maddux for me, is the best pitcher in the history of baseball in my lifetime, I think. So that's going sort of, as someone who watched it, mid-80s and later, I would go with those guys. Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs has a 13-13 record and a 4.63 earned run average. I'm not making those stats up. I'm not pulling a rabbit out of a hat. I'm a Cubs fan. I have a World Series. I have one of the greatest moments of my life, in part thanks to Kershaw in the NLCS. So you can get mad. What is it? Just talking. Or you can get mad. It's fine. You can get mad. That's cool. If you need history to be rewritten for you to be happy, if you need the players that you love's failures to be, we need us to pretend that they're successes, then you're never going to enjoy things in a real way. Kershaw did not live up to the expectations of one of the greatest pitchers of all time. His team lifted him up in the postseason. He has three rings. One was in COVID, which, by the way, I'm not the don't count guy, but it was 2020. One was last year, and one was this year. Two of those, he's not a huge contributor. And the reality is, my friend, that had he pitched at the level that matches regular season greatness, when he had some of the most dominant performances in the history of baseball in the regular season, I did watch the games. I covered Dodgers baseball for two of those seasons. Had he pitched at that level in the postseason, he might have five rings or six rings. And instead of talking about the fact that Yamamoto just had one of the great performances ever, we might be saying Yamamoto just made Clayton Kershaw the best pitcher in history. So maybe you should watch the games a little bit more. Let's do buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
I like having conversations with the audience. By the way, hey man, I think you're being unfair to Kershaw, one response. Hey man, you're ignorant, totally different response.
Also, one thing to add, you can't get mad at what you're saying about Clayton Kershaw and then say, oh, by the way, you don't watch 162. You're not talking about 162.
No.
You're talking about the 20 playoff games every single year that he pitches in, and most of them doesn't perform it.
By the way, he's
two different people.
And he was great in 2020. He was. It's just he's not. Look, if Yamamoto, if Yoshi never pitches well again in the playoffs, that'll be disappointing, but it won't be his legacy because he's not one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Do I expect Shohei Ohtani to do more? Do I expect LeBron James to do more? Do I expect Derek Jeter to do more? Do I expect Vlad Guerrero? Yeah, I do. A lot of Dodgers hitters are going to get a pass, Mookie Betts included, in this postseason because they found a way to get it done. It's a team sport. It's awesome. Mookie Betts was terrible in this World Series, but he had a critical hit, which, by the way, was awesome because he's such a nice guy. And he had that double. And the double play he turned was routine, but he's not a shortstop by training. All right. Let's buy or sell this thing.
The Dodgers got it done.
Appreciate you. But to the Dodgers fan, I'm passionate. You're passionate. I do appreciate you listening. I really do. And it can be both. But Kershaw was brutal in most of his playoff appearances. He was great in 2020. He was a guy the last two seasons. He was.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Commanders had their own slice of brutality last night, Bill. As not only were they blown out by the Seahawks.
Awful.
They lost their quarterback as Jaden Daniels dislocated his elbow late in the fourth quarter as Washington was trailing in the game at the time, 38-7. Now, The Athletic reported earlier this morning that an MRI on Daniels' left elbow came back negative, but either way, an extended absence is still expected from the reigning Rookie of the Year, and he still possibly could be out for the rest of the regular season. Buy or sell, Bill? Dan Quinn deserves criticism for keeping Daniels in the game during the blowout.
All right, so this is tricky, right? Like, the reality is, correct me if I'm wrong here. I was trying to think about this when it went down. Most of the time, guys keep their quarterback in. How many times have you seen Mahomes is never down by multiple touchdowns, but I'll sell. I mean, maybe
sell.
You know, maybe I'm just handing the ball off nonstop. I'm not. It does happen. Guys leave their quarterbacks in sometimes. Are you on the other side of this?
I am. In part because it was a 31-point game. He's a mobile quarterback. Even if Dan Quinn wants to say, well, we're not calling rollout plays where you run, he's still a mobile quarterback. But the biggest thing for me, Bill, is he's coming off injury. You know, he's already missed 3 games this year. He missed last week's game with a knee injury, so this is the first game he's back now. Like, so he already came into the game hurt. You're down 31. I just don't know what you're going to, like, the risk versus reward, where the reward is going to be by leaving him in when you're down by 31 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no. I completely get what you're saying. It's just, I don't know, man. I'm not that mad about it. By the way, earned run. I'm sorry, I'm down a rabbit hole. Clayton Kershaw's earned run average in 2016 when the Cubs won the World Series, 4.44.
That's I would guess what? Is that double his regular season ERA? Or close to it?
He in the critical game, game 6 against when the Cubs were down 3-2, Kershaw went out in game 6 of that. I was at that game. And Kershaw does what Yamamoto did early in the series. Dodgers win that series and go to the World Series. He gave up 4 earned runs in 5 innings. I'm just saying, like, that's
not ace-like there.
It's not. It's not ace-like.
Yeah, we can go down the rabbit hole. Thank you.
I know.
It's Diamondbacks, big home run in a few years ago in 2023. Like, more moments, kind of like Peyton Manning, that are negative.
By the way, Peyton Manning, I know that he's your guy. Peyton Manning's a great example.
But that's almost like me trying to defend Peyton Manning by using regular season stats to fight off your postseason accusations. Doesn't help.
And Kershaw are great examples of it. They're both top. You know, I mean, Peyton Manning's top 3 or 4 or 5 of all time. Clayton Kershaw's the equivalent over the baseball history. He's longer, right? So he's a top, I think he's a top 5 pitcher of all, top 10 pitcher of all time for sure. Maybe top 5. Both guys are beloved by their teammates and are great leaders, and that has an impact, and had some critical moments and big performances on the way to championships, but also cost their team championships, and at times in their championship runs were secondary. That's a great comp.
Unfortunately, like,
you know, I'm gonna buy. Oh, are you gonna call me out for making fun of your question, or do you want me to do it now?
You can do it now. The floor is yours.
Do you have the clip?
I do not.
Okay. On Friday,
myself.
That's okay. On Friday, you asked me if I thought the Dodgers were gonna win the World Series, and I told you what a dumb question that was, and I was mean to you. And then I said, yes, the Dodgers won the World Series. Let me sell me criticizing you.
Sell.
While buying my genius.
Buy.
Thank you.
I thought that always works out for you somehow. There's always some sort of buy at the end. Like, yeah, I was wrong. But, hey, best bud. Boom, buy.
What an apology. Bella B did not like my... In retrospect, it was a good question. You made me put myself out there. You forced my own brilliance out. Thank you. What a producer.
You're the only person I know that could self-congratulate themselves in an apology to someone else while trying to admit they're wrong. That's very funny.
Skill's a skill, bro.
You are not kidding.
I've been married 20 years. I've had a lot of practice.
I guess it takes a certain skill, Bill, for the Bengals to lose the way they have over the last few weeks. They made NFL history yesterday, becoming the first team to lose two consecutive games in which their offense scored at least 38 points as they fell to your Bears 47-42 in a back-and-forth thriller. Joe Flacco threw a touchdown pass with 54 seconds left to take the lead, but Caleb Williams found Colston Lovin for a 58-yard catch and run with just 17 seconds left to steal the win. Post-game, Bill, almost every single Bengals defensive player ditched their media obligations, and offensive players like running back Chase Brown were not very happy. Take a listen to the running back's frustration with the other side of the ball.
We just got to play complimentary football. Like, we put the ball in the end zone and go up a point at the end, finish the f-ing game. Like, just end it. Like, that's it. Like, that's what we need to do. Just end the f-ing game. Like, make them get us the ball back. Let us f-ing go to 22 victory and let's end the game. That's how I feel.
Buy or sell, Bill? This is an appropriate reaction from Chase Brown.
I mean, sell. You can't
sell.
I 100%. You know what? Let me change that. I'll buy it's appropriate.
Bye.
You don't get to say that your guy threw you under the bus when you don't show up for your media obligations. Like, show up and talk yourself. That is some terrible leadership. That's clearly orchestrated. Every defensive player didn't randomly and independently decide to skip out. Buy or sell, those guys are cowards. Buy. I'm going to answer my own
Bye.
Question.
Buy.
Yeah, it's tough. Especially, too. Look, the Bears went up and down, 47 points. Last week, 39 to the Jets.
Yeah. Yes.
Not good.
Buy or sell, the Bengals should just sit Burrow the rest of the year, barring 100% recovery.
Buy.
Why bring him back? Why take any risks?
Even if he's 100%, Bill, in a month from now, they're 3-6, I believe.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Right.
You're like 3-6, you're done.
If we get to mid-December, we get to wherever he's actually... And the thing is, you never know when someone's medically clear. You just don't know, right? You have to take their word for it. Let's say he's actually truly medically cleared behind the scenes. He can play. And he's as much 100% as you can be, right? They're not... Well, he should be fine. He's fine. He's able to be out there. If there's a statistical possibility, no matter how remote, I get it. I covered a Chiefs team once that had to win on the final week of the season when I was a newspaper writer. And I think they had to have 6 or 7 different outcomes. It was the year the Colts won the Super Bowl. And they got it. Like, they won the game in the early game. And then I was covering them. And then we're all like, okay, season's over. And then 7 things happened. And we had to scramble to book flights to Indianapolis. So, in that scenario, yeah, play them. But if they're eliminated, just wait till next year.
J.J. McCarthy, Bill, you could argue, had the best game of his career as a pro. He threw for 2 touchdowns, ran for another one as the Vikings upset the Lions 27-24. Minnesota is now 4-4, but do have a challenging schedule remaining. As of the 8 games they have left, 5 are against teams that are above 500. Buy or sell, the Vikings are a legitimate playoff contender.
I'll buy.
Buy.
McCarthy's interesting because, yes, he had 3 total touchdowns. He completed half of his passes, dude, and he turned the ball over. So here is where it was a really weird game from him. And it's early. He hasn't played much. Remember, he's been injured, and so it's hard to make a real assessment. He was awful at the start of his career but had that crazy comeback against the Bears. Buy or sell, it's possible J.J. McCarthy is going to be some lesser version of Nick Foles, where he's not great, but when it matters, he's great.
Buy.
He's won a national championship in college. His numbers are ugly. You watch him play, it looks ugly. But he does have these moments where he gets the win. That's a close game against the Lions, and he accounted for all the touchdowns.
On the road, too. Lions have been hot.
Right.
It's an impressive win.
I'm starting to go back to my angry listener friend from the Dodgers who has stopped writing.
Weird. When that happens, right?
Some guys are great and not clutch. Some guys are clutch and not great. Maybe that's McCarthy.
We still have a few more questions. Not a lot of time, so...
It's time for No Context Buy or Sell.
Buy or sell, you like that kickers are connecting on longer field goals.
Sell. This is from the record field goal 68-yarder.
From Cam Little of the Jaguars.
Yeah, Cam didn't have a little one.
By the way,
Sell. His last name is
Sell.
It's okay. It's okay.
Sixth field goal this season by NFL kickers of 60 or more yards, already halfway through an NFL record for most of the season.
Yeah, I think we're at a point now where you have to adjust it. You have to tiger-proof the course. You have to change the mound. Whatever it takes. Buy or sell, you're with me. This is the critical rules change to the offseason of the NFL.
Sell.
You don't agree.
I still think it's fickle. Like, I still think it's very...
You're wrong. Sorry. Give me your opinion. What do you think, Ryan? Shut up.
No, I think field goal kickers are still so unreliable that a few could hit bombs. I just don't think it's going to be a trend now where, like, you get the ball basically at midfield and it's like, okay, you're guaranteed 3 points. Now it's just, can you score a touchdown?
I'm worried it's going to trend in that direction. Points are too easy to come by anyway. I don't need 60-yard field goals to be common. But I do hear you.
Buy or sell.
I have one for you.
Oh, okay.
From Bella B.
Okay.
Buy or sell, the Blue Jays will be back in the World Series within the next 2 years.
Ooh. It's a great question.
Sell.
The problem is it's so hard to get there.
And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this team's mental makeup is better than I anticipate. When you lose in such a crushing fashion like that, that feels like it's going to linger. And it feels like already 2026 maybe could be a little bit of a World Series hangover.
Yeah, it breaks you emotionally.
And now it's like, okay, so 2026 is out, and now it's basically 2027 or bust. AL is sneaky good. There are a lot of good young teams that are going nowhere for a while. It's tough.
The 2003 Cubs, the Bartman game that I went to, that team was going to be a dynasty. And that game broke them, as did Dusty Baker breaking, shredding the arms of their names, Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood. I'll say this. I'm with you. I'm going to sell Bella's question. But
sell.
Here's why I'm a little hesitant. A little worried that I'm wrong. I think Vlad Guerrero, I don't watch him play a lot. I just don't watch a lot of, like, he's a, buy or sell, you'd agree he's a generational talent.
Buy.
And he's clutch, dude. He's a clutch player. So they have a guy that can carry them and can instill confidence. So if they can keep the roster where it is, I think they can be in, I think they can have a puncher's chance. It's just, the Dodgers have this advantage where the Dodgers will be in the playoffs every year for the next 10 years. They're not going to miss the playoffs. They're just not. And so that's such an advantage. You get so many bites at the apple.
Finally speaking, which will end it here, Bill, buy or sell, the Blue Jays choked the World Series more than the Dodgers won it.
You asked me this. I'm going to sell. I'm going to sell that question. I mean, look, are you choking the World Series because your pinch runner doesn't lead off far enough on third base? I don't think that's it. Are you choking the World Series because Rojas Miggy makes an incredible play at second base? No, I don't think you are. Are you choking the World Series because you get picked off second base when you shouldn't have in game six to end the game? Maybe a little, but even you said when that ball, we were in the ballpark, we're watching on TV, when that ball came off of his bat, it looked like it was going to drop. Right? He was the winning run at that point?
Tying run.
It was 3-1. He was the tying run. So he's trying to get a jump. He's trying to do the exact thing, the opposite of the guy, of his teammate, who didn't get a big enough lead off in game seven on third base. I don't think they choked. I think if they had been, like, if you were up 3-0 in the ninth inning and you lost game seven, you choked that game. You're up 3-0 in the, was it first inning, second inning, whatever it was, it all bleeds together. Third, no. I mean, the Dodgers chipped away and chipped. It was the third, right? Chipped away and chipped away and chipped away. So I just think the Dodgers won one of the closest World Series we've ever seen. How about you? Buy or sell, you think the Blue Jays choked it away more than the Dodgers won?
Buy.
You're wrong.
Partially just like they had a million opportunities and just to, like, you're right. They didn't get, like, the Dodgers made every play. Every play. But the Blue Jays also had 10 opportunities between really 6 and 7, depending on where it is, to, like, win the game and just didn't come through. Part of that was the Dodgers made plays.
Right.
But a lot of opportunities. One time you come through, you probably win. You go for 10 is tough.
Yeah, but is that, two outs, winning run on second, you're facing someone like Shohei Ohtani or Yoshi. You battle on the at-bat. And then he gets you out. Is that really a choke?
No.
You know?
But it's also like one of those, like when you're a really good team, you have so many opportunities to get it done. Just get it done. Like, here's an example. No one's talked about it, right? You're up 4-3 in the eighth inning of game seven. You get a leadoff double.
Right.
You have to find a way to get him home there. And they didn't do it. And that allows Rojas to come up with now only down by one instead of two. And that home run ties the game instead of still being up by one.
Here's why I think it's not a joke. I know we got to go. You know what? On the other side of this, why I think that Toronto did not choke things away after a sports slash from Andrew Bogusch.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, your Sports Flash is sponsored by Prize Picks. The hard-hitting football action's even better with Prize Picks. Download Prize Picks, use code PRIMETIME, and get $50 in bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. The Dolphins fired their GM Friday. Now they may have begun a sell-off before tomorrow's trade deadline. Linebacker Jalen Phillips reportedly going to the Eagles for a third-round pick. Sunday Night Football was decided. The Seahawks led by 31 points in the fourth quarter last night, but Jaden Daniels was still out there for the Commanders.
Second and goal at the three. Daniels gets the snap, play action. He's in trouble. Gets away from Boye Mafe. In trouble again and spun down by the linebacker Drake Thomas.
That was
the
five.
And now Daniels is down. Oh, my goodness.
They knew right away on Commanders Radio. It's being called a dislocated left elbow, an MRI coming today. That'll tell us how long Daniels will be out. And on opening day for college basketball, we already have a final score. Winthrop held off Queens University this morning, 81-74. I'm Andrew Bogusch.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. This portion of the program is sponsored by Square. More than 4 million neighborhood businesses run on Square. To learn more, go to square.com or just stop by your favorite local business. See you in the neighborhood, Square. Kevin Folitar tweets, Bill's one negative Bears comment away from taking out the verbal belt after that Kershaw take. I'm hanging on by a very thin thread. Trevor in Toronto weighs in. And obviously Trevor in Toronto is on the other side of a remarkable World Series. And he writes, you're bang on with Kershaw. Amazing regular season pitcher. Messed the bed in the playoffs. I named my dog after him, unrelated. Tough loss in Toronto, but I slept like an angel Saturday. Sad my son couldn't have seen them win. Yeah, and that's because, and I'm going to go back to this, Ryan. My guess is that he slept okay, because I don't think Toronto gave it away. I mean, something that struck me as just amazing is that bullpen for the Dodgers was their biggest weakness entering the postseason. They've been a huge mess. And Dave Roberts is perennially criticized, even by Dodgers fans want him fired constantly. And Dave Roberts managed the bullpen masterfully. And he utilized a number of starting pitchers to do that. And Yoshi coming in the day after he went six, pretty impressive innings in Game 6 to pitch almost three innings in Game 3 and close out the game is a testament to his guts. I mean, there were some. I know that Dave Roberts is a sabermetrician, and Andrew Friedman, who runs baseball operations for the Dodgers, are about the numbers. But there was some guts in that game. There were some old school clutch in the Dodgers getting it done. I don't think it was Toronto collapsing, in part because I think Dave Roberts was able to masterfully manage a bullpen that was somehow almost pitch perfect in every sense of the word. They were just. The bullpen for the Dodgers was incredible. And I know you watch the games, like watching the at-bats, those Toronto, like, oh, the catch. We didn't even bring up the catch with Andy, I can't ever say his name, Pahe. I always want to say Pages. It's not his name. I know.
Andy Pahes.
Pahes, Cuban, I think, Cuban pronunciation. A bunch of buddies of mine, if you missed this, I mean, you didn't miss it, you watched, but like, Pahes basically made a catch that saved the game in deep sort of center, left center field, over Kike Hernandez, who was stumbling backwards. And the way the camera caught the angle, it looked like Kike was the only guy in the vicinity who was going to drop and the game was going to be over. And so I have a buddy of mine who sent me a, who I found out randomly, his sister's a famous actress. Anyway, who sent me an AI thing. He wants a statue called The Catch at Dodger Stadium. And I think it's a great idea. And he sent me an AI version of it. That was another one. Is that a collapse by the Blue Jays? Like that falls, I don't know, 2 out of 3, 2 out of 4, 3 out of 5 times. But this center fielder made an amazing play on the ball.
And to your Dave Roberts point, credit to Dave Roberts, Páez didn't start the game because his bat stinks, but he was in for defense late. And if Tommy Edman is in center, that ball, Tommy Edman, no disrespect, is not making that play.
No, he's not making that catch.
And the World Series is probably going to end with Kike Hernandez running around, not catching the ball.
So you got Kike probably stumbling and not getting that ball. You've got the play at home plate that was literally an inch. The right call, though. And it's funny. It's not funny. It's interesting because when they went to review, I didn't want the Toronto player to be safe because I didn't want the World Series, one of the best World Series I'd ever seen, to end on a review where, like, oh, we celebrate now? So that was excruciating because I wanted the Dodgers to win, but had the Blue Jays won, I would have celebrated and been happy for them, right? Again, sort of a neutral leaning Dodgers on that game. That play was incredibly close. The double play to end the entire series where Mookie Betts got it done, incredible. The double play in Game 6 where it is Kike who makes that play and picks the dude, forces the runner off at second, incredible. I mean, the whole thing was just, it was a marvelous World Series. And so, no, I don't think the Blue Jays choked it away. And I know what it is to choke a series away. I've been up 3-1 as a Cubs fan. I mean, people forget that in Game 7, after the Bartman game happened, the Cubs gave it away. In Game 7 of that NLCS for the Cubs 20 years ago, Kerry Wood hit a double off the wall, and I think the Cubs were up 3-0 or 3-1 in that game, 4-0, and then blew that. I mean, this was different. This was a back-and-forth affair. Nobody ever had total control of the series. You knew that even though the Toronto was up 3-2, that with Yoshi going for the Dodgers in Game 6 on Friday, that they were one stellar gem again away from having all the momentum. They had the momentum, and then the Blue Jays took it back, and then obviously the Dodgers found a way to win. I thought it was a great World Series. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you. Thank you to Andrew Bogus. Thank you to Ryan Harris. Thank you to Ryan Hickey. His question on Friday was great. I'm Bill Ryder. We'll see you back here tomorrow on Ryder Than You.